sundown, shining in him.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
Found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
Tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know... That's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis.
I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sun down shining.
Well, we're back to Jackson Jacks. I'm Tom Howard. Ricardo on the board. S&P futures down 13 and a quarter. NASDAQ futures down 83. We were down again yesterday. Mostly the Magnificent Seven were the ones that were down. Matter of fact, it was kind of an odd day because the transportation average was had a huge day to the upside. So, I mean, it's kind of a mixed market, but... definitely on the downside. It makes 3 days in a row. We'll see what happens today. Kevin, are you with us?
Morning.
What's a good word, man?
Yeah, I was up a little later than usual last night.
With our creatures?
With our creatures. I tried to convince them all to come in and crash Stocks and Jocks this morning, but I pretty much got the, oh no, I will be asleep at that hour response.
Yeah, I'm sure they're all going to take a nap, too. They've reached that age. Just saying.
Yeah, I hear you reached that age in, what, about 2 years?
Two years
out from me?
Well, you gotta retire first.
Oh, okay.
Retire, and then, then you gotta get your little nappy poo, you know, every day. A little doze, a little power nap, you know. President Kennedy used to take a power nap every day. Of course, people didn't realize he was probably with somebody at the time. It was a real power nap, as they say.
He went to bed for an hour.
Yeah, you know, yeah.
He didn't necessarily go to sleep.
Speaking of God, talk about starting a day off for Stocks and Jacks. JD and I used to like to go, when we used to go to Vegas a lot. We'd go to the Circus because, back before the new ones were built. And they had, let's just say, the ladies who brought you the free drink were very attractive and had very nice outfits. So this one girl walks up to the pit boss, and he says, "How you doing?" She goes, "I'm just, like, really tired." I looked at her, and he said, "Well, if you spent as much time in the bed as you did on it, you wouldn't be so tired." And she goes, "No, you're probably right." So there you go.
Well, there you have it. Okay.
So Kennedy, I think, was probably sort of in the same group as that. Just so what, God, you couldn't get away from the conviction yesterday all night everywhere. I was all over all the TVs, Foxes and CNBC and Erin Burnett, and I hadn't seen her in ages.
Yeah, I'm sure it was. However, because I was out with our crew and slept a little bit later this morning than I usually do, I really haven't seen any of the coverage of the conviction itself.
So, it's just as well.
And I kind of have a feeling that that's a good thing.
It's just as well. It's very little... You know, and this is nothing we haven't talked about for years now, Kevin. It's, I wasn't listening to every word, but I had no real, shall we say, criticism of the charges and the conviction itself. Not much of that. It was all about should it have happened in the first place because other people are, like, more guilty than he is. Which is really
well. I don't think that should be a scale. I do think there were some things very unusual about the charges and how the trial was operated. But that's probably a better topic to get Lou on here to discuss.
Yeah. The part that I don't get is if people are supporters, you know, it's all about Cohen being a sleazebag. Well,
he is a sleazebag, but he's Trump's sleazebag. It's like, you know, if I have Mickey the Mope doing stuff for me, I'm really Mickey the Mope, aren't I? I mean, if he's doing the stuff for me, whatever. But I tell you what, I am sympathetic to the idea that it seems like an awful lot of stuff goes on and some gets dealt with and some doesn't. I wonder, Kevin, is we on the show, you know, I was talking to some people last night, and we on the show are all, and I accused these guys last night of being the same thing. We were talking about morals and this shouldn't happen, that shouldn't happen. And I said, you know, somehow or another, guys, don't you get it? We're all older guys with a, you know, I'm not saying we all go to church every day, because I sure don't, with this seriously moral background, and we look at things in a certain way. Guys, nobody does that but us now. I mean, everybody, if you jump on the shoulder on the road and you're doing 100 miles an hour for half a mile and you get pulled over, your first thing out of your pie hole is, wait a minute, didn't you catch the guy going 101 miles an hour for 2 miles? What are you looking at me for? That's our world. Nobody stops at a red light. Nobody stops at a stop sign. I mean, it's this whole idea that what are you catching me for? Biden's worse. Hillary was worse. Johnson was worse. I mean, it's right out of people's minds. They absolutely are convinced that they can create their own morality.
Well, but I do think there is a certain logic to that that is important, and that is, you know, I'm kind of in the, oh, you can throw them all in jail as far as I'm concerned, you know.
Oh yeah, me too.
But it should not be unevenly applied. Now, you know, I don't know how well that goes over with the pulled you over for speeding analogy, because they're not going to pull everybody over, but. But when it comes to, you know, whether it's any kind of corruption, whether it's, what the pharmaceutical companies have done, whether, you know, any of that, throw them all in jail. But don't tell me I'm going after this one, but I'm not going after that one.
Right. I'm with you.
That kind of stuff drives me nuts.
Well, you know my feeling on Trump, but I'm seriously sympathetic to what you just said. I mean, everybody knows that Hillary had money coming from foreign governments through the foundation for an election campaign here. And everybody knows that's illegal. I got to believe it. Everybody knows that. And yet, nothing happened, right? Now, why? I mean, I don't understand why. Is it because this guy absolutely goes... I mean, Kevin, you and I know, I think we've learned that you can catch more flies with honey than you can with vinegar, right? I mean, you don't walk in day one and tell the press how they're all a bunch of sleazebags and you can't believe a word they say, and then the next day argue, being mad you got a bad article written about you. I mean, you know, you got to have a certain amount of sense in human nature. This guy has none. You know, so, you know, when you make enemies all along the road and then you're upset when they come back at you, well, come on, guy. You know, duh. But that shouldn't affect professional law enforcement people. You shouldn't get pulled over for speeding just because the cop doesn't like you. You better be speeding, right? And by the way, he should be willing to pull other people over as well. I mean, you and I get that. There's supposed to be a balance, but there isn't. Is there? I mean, I think there is kind of where you...
I can tell there is not.
Well, I think there is... How can I put it? In most parts of the country, I think there still is. I think where you live, there probably still is. Chicago, there's none. None. And I can't believe what it's like in Washington. I can't even imagine what it's like there. It sure as hell, with big companies, it's sure not there, is it? I mean, antitrust, look at what the hospitals do. Look at what these doctor groups do. Look at what these pharmacy places do. It's sure not there, is it?
It definitely is not. And I think that, you know, that's... it's not good for the society, period.
No.
It's, you know, you know, even convictions. You know, I don't know that the glee that we see just because of a political side of the fence, you know, is appropriate. If you think he's guilty, fine. You know, you think he's guilty. If you think he's actually guilty of a crime, you know, of a real crime, fine. That's okay too. But I'm dancing because it's Trump, when I would not be dancing if somebody turned around and prosecuted Biden, or when I scoff at that, that
Yeah.
It's not a happy day for the country. So
I don't think anybody, as much as, you know, I can't, by the way, I talked to, actually it was a young lady last night, said to me, "Oh, I don't care, he's such a creep," which he is. But you know my opinion of the man long before he was president, but I don't think anybody in this country should be harassed. Whatever it is, it shouldn't cost you $60 or $80 million to defend yourself against our government. And yet it does. And they constantly break people of every dime they have. And that's why they win all the time. That's why people plea out. That's why, I mean, my lawyer buddies tell me, you know, I'm representing a bunch of the people with the PPP loans. And I go, still, Kevin, I think there's a good bone in my body that says, maybe they're going after some of these people that had no damn business getting that money. Some of the preacher groups, some of the firms that, you know, maybe didn't pay their people, those kinds of things. Oh, no, they're going after people who never even got the money. They lied on an application and never even got acted on. I said, they're doing what? They're going after people that never got a dime? Yeah. What's the return on that, Kevin?
What are you going to do, claw back nothing?
Yeah. They didn't even... So, it's against the law to lie in a federal application. Yeah, but they never got any money. They never. Plus,
we'll see. There happens to be a trial that's about to start on the president's son to see if about lying on a federal application. Let's see what happens with that.
But Kevin, we were somewhat into that because people were asking me advice. My advice on it. Not that I. The weird part is if you followed it, you made an application for a loan, okay, and you were obligated to pay it back. Now, if you fibbed on that application and you got the loan and you paid it back, I'm not sure exactly who's harmed. The harm would come when you applied and said, I used the money for these set of things, and by the way, the law says if I used it for these set of things, the loan is forgiven. So if there's any fib, lie, crime that was there, it was in the part where I didn't pay the government, meaning the rest of us, back. If Mickey DeMope got the loan when he maybe shouldn't have and paid it back with interest, why do I care, Kevin? I mean, I care because you shouldn't do that, but in terms of any damage, why do I care? It's only if Mickey DeMope then said, well, I paid out salaries to people and I didn't have any people. That's where the crime comes in, or what am I missing?
I don't think you are missing anything.
So what are we going after all these other people for?
Easy marks?
You put somebody's scalp up on the wall?
I guess. I mean, isn't that what an ambitious prosecutor might do if that ambitious prosecutor wants to run for a higher office? To be able to say, look, not look at the individual cases, because nobody's ever going to do that, but look at my conviction rate. Look at all the people I hit with fines or whatever. I think there's a certain amount of that goes on. Do you not?
Well, we get audited by, well, we used to get audited by the exchanges. Now it's audited by FINRA from time to time. And I'm going to go out on a limb and say, no firm is perfect with all the rules and regulations and little bits and pieces of things you have to do. Yet, literally, they spend hours and hours trying to find something that they can write you up for because they're not willing to leave until they find something because they got to do it. Now, if they don't find very much, they'll just write you up and give you a warning and stuff. Which of course, my brother, he wants our place perfect. So that bothers him from 3 months. Where everybody else said, "Well, is that what you got written up for? Could go out and have a beer. You won." But he doesn't feel that way. He wants a perfect shop. He doesn't want to do anything wrong. Anyway. So I mean, yet they are there, and by the way, they are an operation that they get their money from fining people. Now, I'm going to say that's about as bad a design as you can find in anything, isn't it, Kevin?
It certainly has, and it creates an incentive to find people.
Yeah. And your bigger firms.
Now my raise depends on it.
Yeah, I mean, if you walk into some huge firm and you walk out with a $20,000 fine, and they'll say, God, everybody else got 50. We must be doing good. Well, that's not, you know, my world. I mean, I don't know. I don't think it's yours either. But it is a big chunk of this world. So, I think that one of the biggest problems in this country is the justice system. And I think the question is, was there personal animosity that singled Trump out for this trial? The question of paying the lady off and saying he never met her and all this kind of, I mean, the guy's such a goofball. I mean, all of that he's guilty of, I think. I don't think anybody's...
Yeah, that's not a crime.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I don't even know. Now, if you paid somebody hush money, and you dropped it on your tax return and deducted it as an expense, I guess that's an IRS issue, right? Because it's not exactly deductible expense.
But that's not likely to be a. I suppose it could be a felony.
Yeah, I'm saying so. But the question is, should he have been there at all? I mean, I think you can. As a, I won't say a hater, but as somebody who doesn't want the guy anywhere near the Oval Office, I still don't think that's fair, Kevin. I don't. I really don't. So, but I don't know that much about the case. What else was in there besides that? I mean, what were the 34 counts?
Well, basically, the felony is what they're trying to do is take misdemeanors, and use those as a basis for. Rolling them up, calling them election fraud, and making that the felony.
Ah.
So, you know, by covering up the payments, that influenced an election, and that's the claim. Now that's ridiculous because the Federal Election Commission looked at this and declined to prosecute. And then the judge would not allow, in this case, would not allow the testimony from the guy at the Federal Election Commission to explain why he didn't think it was worth prosecuting. So, when I say there's a lot of irregularities in this case, that's it. You know, another strangeness was that the prosecution never really articulated connected the dots on the felony until the closing arguments, but the judge had the defense go first on closing arguments and then the prosecution, so they didn't have a chance to rebut that. There are lots of things like that. It's strange that the number three guy at Department of Justice, left his job to go to work in a much lesser job for Alvin Bragg on the prosecution side. There's a whole lot of strangeness in here, and I don't know that this, I think there's probably enough stuff in there that is at least going to be good grounds for an appeal, whether it's up, whether the appeal holds or not. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see what the next move is for Trump and his legal team. I would not be surprised if they go to try to get an emergency stay from the Supreme Court because, there's just a lot of strangeness in here. So we'll see. We'll see what happens.
He was convicted of being a sleazeball. We knew that all along. Whether it's a felony or not, I don't know.
Oh, and you know what I think is crazy about this is if there were some, if we really did get normalcy from the Biden administration as promised, I think Trump would have gone by the wayside. Because what was the 2020 election? We're tired of you. We're sick of you, Trump. It's not, it wasn't we love Joe Biden. It was as people had, they had had more than enough of Donald Trump. But when you start to look at, all of the stuff that we've seen over the last year, the stuff that has come front and center, whether it's the lack of border control and the number of illegals who have been flooded into cities and the cities can't handle them, closed hotels and facilities, whether it's the Afghanistan departure, whether it is just crazy cultural things that the Biden administration has been, four square in support of, whether it's drag queen story hours or transgender stuff, that when you start to look at the social media censorship, when you start looking at everything about trying to force people to take vaccines, out of control inflation, you start getting a full dose of that and say, well, Trump ain't any crazier than those people.
No, he actually, other than him,
seems not. Now they're all crazy, so I'm not saying he looks normal compared to them. I'm saying they look as crazy as he is.
I think in a lot of ways they're worse. I honestly do. I mean, but the you get the feeling since I have no push for Biden whatsoever. I mean, I will not vote for him. But you get the feeling that Trump is the constant fly by the seat of the pants routine. I think it's just dangerous in that job. He didn't really do anything that, he didn't press the button. He didn't do any of the stuff that everybody thought he might. But that personality, I just don't think belongs there. I mean, is there any chance that the Republicans might say, we're over this dude, get somebody good in there so I can vote for him?
Will be, I don't know what basis they would have for that when he's got enough delegates to get the nomination. They would have to get him to back out. And you think that's going to happen?
No, I mean, I said, because then Biden at one point said the only reason why he's running is because Trump is running. Maybe if they got rid of Trump, they'd get rid of Biden, and we have two people that are decent.
Well, they may need to get rid of Biden anyway, so.
Well, I think they're biggest problem there, and this is not racist. This is a competence thing. Biden's biggest problem is his VP. I mean, in terms of electability, I don't know that the dude's going to make it 4 years, and if he doesn't, I want nowhere near the place. It's not like I don't want to have a woman there. I'd be happy to have somebody a woman there.
And that's the thing is they can't kick her to the curb either.
They need to find a way. I mean. Tell you what, Roosevelt did, right? When they knew he was going to die, they didn't want that guy as president.
When you build up your whole, when a substantial part of your party's agenda is, racial divides, race-based politics, gender divides, gender politics. When you have all of that, you're not kicking the black woman to the curb.
No, I.
That's not going to go over well in that party. And so I think, they have their own problems, and, those are, but that's a problem of competence. Why was she chosen in the first place? Strictly because of that gender and racial profile that she has, not because of competence, because the American people got a load of her during the campaign and said, not interested. She didn't even make it to the first primary. So, That's a competence issue with Biden, he's all of the corruption stuff. That's still there for him.
Well, and it's also part of when Jan was on the show, he would say that and Jan allegedly is this Mr. Conservative. He said he would vote for Obama again in a second. Rich people did better on Obama than ever did anybody else, and I think they're doing the same under Biden.
Oh yeah.
I mean, he's got this thing going, but he won't touch one of these big companies. I mean, he's got this. I mean, I just had a discussion with my creatures here a couple of weeks ago about how much he's burying the oil industry. Oil industry has never increased in size and drilling under any president ever as much as they have under Biden. I mean, it's like what the movie when the legend conflicts with the facts, print the legend. I mean, the fact is, these guys are doing great. the Democratic Party has become the party of the rich people now.
Oh, absolutely, it has.
Yeah,
and it's interesting that so many that the wealthiest of the wealthy support them, but they don't live the agenda that they support.
Oh, absolutely not.
Then they're all about their gated communities and their and tax shelters and you name it, that's all there.
I think we'd be out of these two people. I think you're probably more likely to get an antitrust thing against the medical group under Trump than you would Biden.
I don't know about that. He had his chance.
Well, yeah, I mean, I, okay, instead of a 0%, make it 1%. How's that? Let's be futures.
Well, whatever. I think if we do, if Trump is elected, he tried to say in an interview not too long ago that it's not going to be about revenge. His best revenge would be to be successful. But I think at this point, I would fully expect the revenge tour for Donald Trump.
SP Futures down 11, NASDAQ Futures down 69. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Well, welcome back, Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell, Ricardo on the board. S&P futures down 11, NASDAQ futures down 68. We're down, but not a whole lot of conviction here this morning. I mean, we've had three down days in a row. We'll see. It's the individual stocks. I'm not seeing anything do much. NVIDIA, which was down a bunch yesterday, is up 788 today. I think it was down like 40 or 50 yesterday. So, and Microsoft had a big down day too. Part of that has to do, I think, with they were in one of these companies that was down as well. Dow futures only down 46. I see nothing really moving in the Dow. Goldman Sachs down $1.79. Amazon down $1.57. But then I've got, you know, Microsoft up 63 cents and McDonald's up $1.04. So again, we're kind of quiet here. Asia, we've got Nikkei, which was down a bunch yesterday, is up 433 today, 1.1%. The Hang Seng down 150. They keep going down 0.8%. They're almost down to 18,000. 18,079. They were 19,000 like not too long ago. Shanghai down 5.2%. So not much going on there. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX down 9. Call that flat. FTSE up 34.4%, kick around down 4, call that flat. European stocks choppy as Eurozone inflation ticks up. There you go, ticks up. Yesterday, Dow's down another 330, S&P down 31, NASDAQ down 183. Just bad. The big number this morning is this. Stock futures inch lower as investors brace for inflation report. This is the one the Fed looks at, the CPE or whatever, and that you can't. There's no background at all you can find on the thing. It's just a number the Fed lobs out there and says they look at it. They also seem to create it, which is a little odd for me, but, you know, man, what the hell? This is the new world. U.S. 10-year 4.56 unchanged. The bond up 4 basis points, 2.69. Japan up 1 basis point, 1.07. By the way, Japan confirmed in the last few months they've put, since the yen has been falling like a rock due to these interest rates changing, they actually... They did a currency intervention, which I haven't heard of in a decade. They evidently ponied up $62 billion out of the coffers and bought yen, which is really a useless deal by a government. But they're claiming success, so good for them. Oil down 5 cents, 77.86. Brent down 25 cents, 81.61. Natural gas down 2 cents, 2.54. So oil just blipped over 80 for a second when OPEC said they were going to keep their cuts or no cuts. And then it came right back down again. Gold down $1.60. It had a rally yesterday, 23.64, trying to make it to 2,400. Can't quite get there. Silver down 7 cents, 31.46. Copper down 2 cents, 4.63. And we have Bitcoin down 4.54, 68,325. A lot of stuff, Ricardo. Baseball teams lose again. Why don't you tell a story, though?
Morning, Chief. It's currently 6:35 a.m. right here in beautiful Chicago. We're looking at 56 degrees right now with a high of 75 today. partly sunny, a very nice day for outdoor activities. Tonight we have some clouds with a shower in spots toward dawn with a low of 62 degrees Fahrenheit. Over in Phoenix we have 78 degrees right now with a high of 106 degrees Fahrenheit. Up with plenty of sun and tonight will be clear with a low of 75 degrees. On a traffic in Chicago, inbound Kennedy from Monroe's is going to be 15 minutes. You're looking at 33 minutes inbound Edens from Lane Cook. Inbound Eisenhower from Wolf, 27 minutes. Inbound Dan Ryan from 95th, 17 minutes. And Stevenson from 294 to the Dan Ryan is going to be 29 minutes. And yes, you're right. The Brewers beat the Cubs 6-4 in Milwaukee. And the Mets beat the Diamondbacks 3-2 in New York City. That was yesterday. But today we got the White Sox playing the Brewers in Milwaukee at 7:10 p.m. And the Diamondbacks play the Mets in New York City again at 6:10 p.m. And the Cubs play the Reds in Chicago at 1:20 p.m. Another news in NBA, the Mavericks beat the Timberwolves yesterday 124-103 in Minnesota. So that means that the Mavericks will play the Boston Celtics for the championship finals. And that's all I got for you. Back over to you, Chief.
Were you, I turned that game on last night, Kevin, figured it'd be a knockdown dragout, and I was kind of stunned. What, those guys were up like 35 in the first half or something?
Yeah, I don't think I just heard about it driving home last night. The Timberwolves just didn't show up.
Yep, I'm stunned on that. Anyway, by the way, since we've talked about here, the PCE comparison to the CPI, okay? The PCE price index, also referred to as the PCE deflator. PCE price deflator, implicit price deflator for personal company expenditures, blah, 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 by the Bureau of Economic Analysis, and is the chain type price index for personal consumption expenditures by the Federal Open Market Committee, is the United States-wide indicator of the average increase in prices for all domestic personal consumption. If you have to use that many words to describe something, is that a good thing?
No, it's not a good thing.
You
have to be concise.
You got to be concise.
Just go with PCE deflator because it deflates all optimism.
Is a component statistic for consumption in gross domestic product collected by the Bureau of Economic Analysis. Anyway, but comparison to the CPI. The formula effect accounts for the different formulas used to calculate the two indexes. The PCE price index is based on the Fisher ideal formula, while the CPI is based on the modified last praise formula. Who the hell are they? Good Lord. Anyway, the bottom line is, and this is on Wikipedia, so where they get this adjustment, Kevin, I don't know, because I've never been able to find it other than Wikipedia. The consumption category, what they're trying to do is say that they're trying to find something that's more close to what the actual consumer actually pays for real stuff, where they think the CPI might have gotten away from that a little bit. But now, the adjustments are pretty interesting. Now, these guys finally adjusted, I don't know. Food and beverage, CPI's got us at 15.1% of our expenditures, our basket. The unadjusted PCE is 13.8. Price-adjusted PCE is 17. Yeah, so pretty close. Housing. CPI's got housing at 42%. The PCE's got it at 26.5. I'm not exactly sure who the hell gets to live someplace for only 26% of your salary, but I guess some people do. The adjusted PCE is 32.9, so they bring it back up adjusted. Now this is the interesting one. Medical care, which we have talked about ad nauseum, that in the CPI it's 6.2% of the basket when it's like 21% of the economy, and Carl's always talking about how much it is in the federal budget. The PCE unadjusted is 22.3. So right about where you and I and Carl and the rest of us might put it, right? However, the adjusted is 5%. It's even lower than the CPI. How the hell can anybody think that medical care in this country is only 5% of everybody's basket, Kevin, when it's 21%?
The oddball thing about medical care is simply this. If you don't need any medical care, it's 0% of your basket. When you do, it's going to bankrupt you.
Well, I mean, it's like saying...
You start throwing in the cost of insurance, which is expensive, and that's more than 5% of the basket, probably, for most people.
It's actually 0.6 in the CPI.
Yeah, that doesn't sound right.
No.
It doesn't sound right at all. So, yeah, you know, on the one hand, we're just killing the federal budget with medical care expenses, with Medicare and related expenses, and on the other hand, we're saying, it's only a small slice of it.
Well, but it's
that's a nice lie.
But if you, I didn't say you embrace this logic, but if you take that logic to the fullest extent, if the price of a new roof doubles, does that mean it isn't for you until you need a roof? Or the fact is, it doubles. It's supposed to be a percentage of everybody's basket, when we both know, I think, from, well, you still teach statistics, me from when I forgot about it, it's really everybody spends, if you own a home, I'll use the accounting term, everybody spends 2% of a roof or 3% of a roof every year, right, if you amortize for it?
Sure.
So it's not like I don't need a roof for 20 years and then all of a sudden I do. You really should say, okay, it's going to cost me $50,000 to put the roof up. The next day after you get a new roof, you should start putting two grand.
Yeah, you start depreciating.
Yeah, you should start putting $2,000 in a bank account.
That's not how people's budgets are. People pretty much budget on a cash basis.
Well, and I think Kevin, boy, you know, this is a summation of a lot of stuff we've talked about, you and I and Dan and everybody else, because these things that you don't think about are so expensive now. To budget on a cash basis, and I do it as well, is probably the most ignorant thing anybody can do, isn't it? I mean,
well,
to say I'm never.
We're splitting hairs. People don't use generally accepted accounting principles, and they're not going to. Now, does that mean you should not be socking away, you know?
Well, that's what I mean.
Money for those kinds of emergencies. Yeah, but that's still budgeting. You can still budget on a cash basis and do that.
Well, it comes down to sort of a rainy day fund. I mean, somebody in today's world, if you know, you had a family of two people, two kids. You know, suppose we had a family of six and they're playing, well, just living, but generally playing sports all over the damn place and doing stuff and going here back and forth on their bike. Someday, somebody is going to have a broken finger or a broken something or a sprained ankle. You're going to be in an emergency room. You probably could say it's going to be once a year on average. And by the way, the sprained ankle is going to be $15,000 to be in the door of the place. So to say this is never going to happen, I'm never going to budget for it, is probably, not saying I don't do it, is probably on a fiscal basis pretty damn stupid.
Yeah, it is totally, let's be kind and say unwise.
Yeah.
I agree with you on that. That's, but not the point. That isn't really how people think of, you know, their regular, their ongoing expenses. So, yeah, you know, it's a little bit different mindset, but what we're really saying is, yes, you should be socking away money for a rainy day. You should have a rainy day fund. That's cool, but, you know, by the same token, if you're going to say, what do people experience every day, people who need ongoing health care experience a very high level of expenses every day. People who don't have any need for it at the time are not experiencing it. So, you know, it's just kind of a weird dynamic. If you're looking for something that reflects how people live and you know, what the average person's experience is, that's a different matter. And, you know, I'll tell you, the average person's experience right now is problem. The big problem is the grocery store.
Well, I think it is too, Kevin. There's two things we're talking about. As usual, we're two layers of the chessboard. You're saying the reason why people aren't able to have the rainy day fund is it's not like, not everybody, but in the 60s, let's say, maybe even early 70s, your wealth was the old man made $100 a week, and by the way, the family lived on 80 and 20 went in the bank. That's how you built wealth. Now I think there's very little of that, and it's all about is the price of the house that you bought going up, is the price of your stock going up, those kinds of things. But I'll give you an instance. You know, I don't mind telling personal stuff. I went and bought this truck, right? I didn't pay very much for it, and it was, you know, I think it was $12,000 or something. Because I don't feel like buying something expensive after people banging on my door in the place I park. So I buy this truck. It's fine. So now, could I have gone to the bank and dragged out the $12,500 in cash or written a check? Yeah. But I get this thing in the mail from this credit card company. Hey, how about 16 months? No interest. I go, okay then.
Yeehaw, let's postpone. Oh, yeah.
No, but I'm saying, but
that's a problem.
All right, so I got 12 months. I'm sending them $1,500 a month. I'll be done in a couple of months. Not that I couldn't have done it the other way. Now, what's the bet they're making? They're making the bet that somewhere during that 15 months, something bad happens to me, or water pipe pumps through the ceiling and wrecks my furniture that I got to go out and spend. God knows how much you got to pay for furniture these days. And all of a sudden, I can't cover all this by cash. Something's going on the credit card, and by the way, I let this car payment go more than the 12 months or 16 months, and now I'm paying 24%. That's the bet they're making, and I think they win a real lot, Kevin. And it's not because people don't think that they're going to pay it off. It's because they can't. It's the emergency room visit. It's something. I mean, how many people will walk over to Joe's, have a beer, watch the ball game, and Joe going, man, I just got stuck with this $30,000 roof. And I can't believe it cost me that much. And, man, sorry, Joe. You want me to buy a beer next time? Instead of walking home and saying, looking up and going, I think my roof's got 5 years left. I better start putting away $6,000 a year. I mean, if you can, right? But I think that the shock of this stuff, the shock of the services, the shock of the medical care, the shock of the prescription drug. Wait a minute. Prescription's drug, $400? What are you guys talking about? Is it gold? I mean, I think that the shocks... People have still not come to grips with how bad this is out there because they haven't affected them yet.
And it hasn't affected the people who make policy.
Oh, without a doubt. And it hasn't affected people on TV. They have a great hospitalization policy and blah, blah, blah. They're making enough, they don't care.
But where it's really not flying with the general public, and this is a big Biden problem because he does this all the time, But it's really a lot of the pundit class as well, is they're telling you, you don't realize how good this economy is, and it's like they're telling you you're too stupid to understand that the economy is booming because you cretins go to the go to the grocery store and you don't like the bill. So.
How much of this, Kevin, I'll try to get John Leon someday, maybe when you're on, because you'll ask better questions than me. He said he just got back from Tokyo, and he said the mood there is, or, we're talking about one person, but John's pretty, observant. Because everybody is bitching about not the inflation so much, but the fact that nobody's gotten a raise in 10 years. You got a government... manipulating their stuff so bad they got to pony up money to try and buy yen because the yen's dropping too much. Kevin, the weird part, when governments used to do this, I'm going to say all the time, but it was much more common during the 80s, 90s, okay, and we're on the trading floor, and of course that's all we talk about is stuff like this when you're trading, right, because a lot of this stuff can move the markets. The thing that is the most bizarre, there were days, Kevin, where, France, this was before there was the euro dollar, France intervenes in the market and they piss away, $20 billion buying francs. And at the end of the day, the francs are lower than when they started. Now, if you're a trader, you just go, let me get this straight. How many French francs versus other currencies versus U.S. dollars transpire every day? I wish I had to call my buddies from the Fed here. The numbers are mind-boggling, how much currency transaction takes place every day, Kevin. And for some government to go out and say we're buying $20 billion worth, that might be a half a day's deal. If it's going the other way, all it is a horse bleep trade. So the guy in the pit goes, there is a great trade. Those idiots just lost $40 million in 4 hours. it's a trade. You're intervening in a big market, and you're trying to... It's like... You and I, if IBM is going downhill, we're going to go in and buy 20,000 shares and stem the tide. Really? I've got to believe that this thing in Japan, if the yen is going to keep going down, it's going to keep going down. And there's $60 billion. They're just going to lose $20 billion on the trade, or not maybe not that much, but 10. I mean, it's a trade, right? It's not a, it's, they call it an intervention. It's a trade. They're going in and buying stuff, and because of
I do love the language, though, because, you know, it's all doublespeak.
Yeah. Isn't it beautiful?
It is a beautiful thing.
So what's going on in your world? You haven't talked about, what are you guys doing, summer school? Is summer school different?
Summer term starts on Monday. So I've got a couple of classes to publish this morning, and then I'll be ready to rock. I've got another project I'm working on with our Bloomington campus on doing a project management course, you know, a skills based thing, not for credit, for them. So I've got plenty to keep me busy, work wise. A lot of it's classroom stuff this summer, which will be fun. Actually, I've re-engineered the operations management class that we teach to embed in it a demand planning certification. So I'll let you know how that goes.
What have you guys? Remember last week we had the conversation with Ricardo that where he's gone, some of the 4-year schools are doing stuff at his place to where you can maybe stay there and get your 4-year degree. Are you guys thinking at all about doing something like that, or you just want guys out?
We're pretty well integrated with the state schools throughout Indiana, the state 4-year colleges. So, you know, we feed a lot of people locally to IU South Bend. The Ivy Tech feeds a lot of people into, you know, Purdue Fort Wayne or IU Fort Wayne, or
what do those places cost?
University of Indiana at Bloomington or Ball State, or, you know, and on and on and on. So
what is the
we have a sort of a symbiotic relationship there.
What's the tab at IU South Bend or Purdue, wherever the other place was?
I'd have to go look it up, Tom. I'm not sure.
But it's not 70 G for a commuter.
No, it's nothing like that. And it's not like you're going to live on campus either. It's commuter school, but it's good. You know, it's a good. They have good programs.
The professors, are they people from the industry, or are people?
It's a little of each. They certainly have their full time faculty, but then they'll bring in people to teach, you know, like evening courses, just like I do.
So they have, like, you know, somebody might be a CPA during the day and actually teach a class at night or something?
Yeah, an adjunct professor. It's not something you do for the money, believe me, because you don't make that much doing it. But there's a lot of people who just, you know, they like to contribute. They like, and they enjoy teaching.
Well, I don't think, how can I put this? People don't mind doing it if the school isn't, obviously we're heading down to our college reunion this weekend. I mean, you're not, because you're 2 years behind, but even though you're going to be there and we have dinner tonight, it'll be fun.
Yeah, I actually, you know, I made today put my name in the transfer portal and transfer to your class.
Oh, God. Well, that's, Dan would like to as well. My brother, he's more buddies among us than I think he does among the people he graduated with. But
bring Dan with you. You know, tell him to jump in with you tonight.
It wouldn't be a bad idea, actually. But I guess...
And bring some homebrew while he's at it.
Well, I remember when our friend, and we're going to have to, we guys obviously got to tip a class to Bob tonight. Our group, and Kevin is, again, an add-on because he's 2 years younger. We had basically, 11 people? And I guess the numbers are we've only lost one. But that doesn't count because the onlys are...
We've lost two out of my group.
Lived
with us at the same time.
I know, and that's... But... Now, Bob, for that lack of people who weren't listening to the show back then, Bob used to come on once in a while. Bob was an attorney and a CPA, stone cold brilliant, and did a lot of the tax stuff. I guess I will sort of blame him, but a lot of the stuff you see people overseas and taking a lot of the tax dodges that you can't believe anybody got away with. And some of those were from the group Bob worked with, right? I mean, those guys like invent the double Dutch sandwich and all, or whatever it was. And Bob's a real straight guy. I remember one day I asked him, "Hey Bob, how do you keep a straight face when you run this by the IRS? It's so absurd." He goes, "For $600 an hour, you learn how to keep a straight face." You're talking to these morons. Anyway, he was an adjunct professor, Kevin, and I remember him telling me that he did a international taxation class, of which there's no textbook, so he spent. And I'm going to say, How many people do you think are even capable of teaching that class? Bob and 30 others? 40? I mean, I sure as hell...
Yeah, it's a small number of people.
And so he puts this thing together. He says it took me hours and hours and hours just to do the syllabus. And all the papers in there were basically writings that I found. There was nothing, you know... University of Chicago was like that. You never really get... Most of the time, you didn't get a textbook. You got a big brown envelope with about 30 papers in there from individual people writing on subjects. Whole different brand of education. Anyway, so Bob was getting... Was he making $1,600 a class or something?
Oh, yeah. I mean, they were paying a minimum wage, basically.
You know what the tab was for... He was teaching, I'm going to say, was it maybe 25 on campus? And then they had those satellite places where, you know, they look like Hollywood Squares. And this is even before, way before COVID. And I think they used to be in shopping centers all around the country, right? So I'm going to say that the total tab probably was, what, 100 students in his class? Maybe 100 and a quarter? They were $5,500 a pop, Kevin. And the poor dude's making $1,600. So what's 5,500 times 100? Good Lord.
It's a hell of an investment by the university.
Hey, it is stunning. You know, what's the variable return on that? There isn't a company in the world that wouldn't want that, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, like our course is, you know, there's a whole course development process. So there's a standard course for the whole state. Locally, you know, if somebody's taking it online, that's what they're getting is the course the way it's developed. But locally, as long as I meet the course objectives, I can modify the course however I want to. I just have to meet the objectives specified for the statewide course, which is what I'm doing on the demand planning course. So we have that. But yeah, if I hire an adjunct professor, I say, here's your course, you know, just load it up, you know, here it is, put the due dates on your assignments and you're ready to rock. And you know, we make it pretty easy on them.
Kevin, how do you, we don't have that much time, but I'm fascinated by the demand planning. How much research, how much whatever, how does a regular firm, a mid-sized firm, when I say regular firm, how do you, when you react to other people's things, like where my nephew works, I mean, it's a metalworking place, but you can tell when you're busy, obviously, and you can tell when you're not, but you're always reacting to somebody else got more business, and oh, by the way, the machine they haven't used in a couple of years because they didn't need it, all of a sudden they need it, it needs 50 parts, and they need them in 4 days. I mean, how does somebody at that level where you constantly are reacting to other people's, how does that... I mean, I know how you'd like to be able to do the demand planning, but how do you do it?
Well, you know, let's take, because we have a lot of RV industry here, let's take that as an example. First of all, if you're a supplier to the RV industry, well, you know, the big dogs over here are Thor Industries, which includes Jayco, and Forest River. And so, you know, anybody will tell you when Thor or Forest River calls you up and says, I need something and I need it, you know, like tomorrow, you drop everything and you do it. That's what happens. That's the nature of the business. So how do you do demand planning in that environment? Well, I mean, basically there's a lot of ways you can go about doing it, but you have a pretty good idea. First of all, you know what history is. You know how many times your phone's going to ring. And it's going to be somebody from there saying, hey, I need this. So you can bake that, you know, kind of into your plan. But by the same token, you're just going off of industry data, industry trends. Where's, you know, what's the overall demand going to be expected to be? So, yeah, you're going to, you know, the world, you know, living in the operations world, you're always going to be adjusting things and you're always going to be, you know, trying to figure out, you know, how to adapt real quickly. You know, we need, you know, Gunny Highway saying, talking about how you adapt and so on. So that's part of it. But it depends on the business. You know, that's also, you know, are we talking about businesses with long lead times to production, long lead times to get your parts, to source your parts and so on? Or are we talking about things that, you know, where you may be, you know, I'll go back to my Better World Books days. You know, Bill Walton dies. Do you have, you know, Bill Walton, any book about Bill Walton or about UCLA or about any of that kind of stuff? Do you have that ready to go on your webpage with, you know, a cache of books ready to send out? You know, let's just say somebody, you know, somebody bigger than that, you know, somebody more influential than that, passes away. You know, are you ready to adapt on the fly? And this is where, you know, the whole analytics world gets, you know, it becomes a big deal. And, you know, your ability, how you design your operation and your ability to source and your ability to produce, that all gets to be a part of it. Because if you're in an industry that that has to adapt to what's trending, then you better be flexible and you better be ready to go. And that's, you know, now you've just gotten a dose of what goes into your supply chain management program, how you go about doing that. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I mean, I've got an analytics certificate rolling out this fall for supply chain that's going to be part of that. I have, you know, you've got that whole area of big data analytics. When they talk a lot about artificial intelligence, but I really think at the moment it isn't so much artificial intelligence as what's your ability to crunch data fast, you know, real time, unstructured data, and what's your ability to chew on it fast, and then, you know, have a very adaptive production model that says, I see what's happening.
Well, you got to have somebody who's got to
get stuff out the door.
You got to have somebody who notices a tone change for sure.
It always exists out in the data. So that's what you're looking at.
All right, I'll see you tonight.
So I make 7 o'clock reservation.
I'm leaving Orland. If all goes well, at 3:30, make it 4:30 your time. You tell me on the 8094. I'd love to be there way before that. But
we'll adapt on the fly then.
Yeah, okay. So I'll keep you posted.
All right.
Do we have Carl on the line?
Yeah, we should.
You most certainly do.
What's up, bud? Some interesting stuff from Kevin. I bet that's an interesting class. I took the theory of price from Milton Friedman. I never saw more supply curves in my life, and everybody did the best they could to knock him off the topic and talk about something else, because nobody, even he, was interested in that crap. But I still have the book, and I'm like, God, there's so much calculus and so much. I'm like, what are we doing here? Good Lord. Anyway.
Well, you know, one of the things that I, you know, as I pointed out, you know, we were talking about Tuesday, you know, you said, well, let's revisit some of that. And that was the whole chain I was going down on disincentives and incentives and what we do as a society and the impact that has. And, you know, I saw an example of it that showed up that was really quite funny, although it's not. And it was a clip of a guy who had been busted for driving on a suspended license in Michigan, a black dude. And now, I didn't know that this had changed. When I was younger, when I was a young man, you got caught driving on a suspended license, it was a sit in jail until you see the judge thing. Okay?
This has changed.
Well, I'm just saying, when I was a young man, everybody knew that was the deal. And if you did it and got caught, you were not, they were not going to bond you. You were going to sit in jail, and if it happened to you on a Friday night, you were sitting in jail until Monday morning, okay? Because, you know, they have their 72 hours or whatever before you have to be arraigned. So, and you would spend every one of those hours, you know, cooling your heels in the holding cell. So anyway, this guy gets busted, and he has his first appearance. His attorney shows up in court. He's given leave to appear by Zoom. And guess where he appears by Zoom, what he's doing?
Driving.
To a doctor's appointment. And so the judge is a black guy too, which is even more funny, okay? The judge is sitting there behind the bench, and the suspect pops up on the the video screen, and the look on his face is priceless. All right, and he says, "Excuse me, where are you?" He says, "Well, I'm pulling in right now to the," and the judges, they're going, "What?" You know. So finally, he says, "Well, are you now stopped and not moving?" And he says, "Yes, sir. The vehicles are parked up, turned off." And he says, "So let me see if I understand this. You were arrested for driving on a suspended license, and you're appearing in court driving."
God.
All right. Well, so the judge turns around and revokes his bond and says, "By the way, if you don't surrender by 5 o'clock, there's going to be a bench warrant out for you."
Well, they had a you must have left Chicago, I don't know how many years ago, but it's somewhere before COVID. This had to be, it's probably 10 years, but when the Sun Times was still kind of a newspaper, well, they actually were coming back a little bit, but they went to all these traffic courts, and there's a few around here, and people with suspended licenses would come in and plead, you know, to get their license back, and they had a camera, you know, a small camera. And they'd follow these guys. A significant percentage of them not only drove to court, but parked in the court lot.
Right.
You know, at least if you're going to do that, wouldn't you think you'd park around the block or someplace
else? Park somewhere else and walk the last block.
Walk the last block, you know. But no. And the judge would say, "No, you know, it's another 4 months," and they'd go right back out and hop in the car and drive away. They had a guy yesterday who was arrested. This is kind of a serious question because you're seeing it, like, all over the place. I mean, I can't imagine if you stopped a bicyclist for going through a stop sign. I mean, he would be the most outraged person on earth. What are you talking about? And the next day, it wasn't like he would think that stoppage was of such a random event. It wouldn't change his. They arrested some dude, and he had a firearm felony conviction at some point. So they stop him. He was speeding. Of course, you would think he'd drive carefully, but he's speeding, you know, way over the limit. They pull the guy over. Not only is he on a suspended license, he's got no insurance, and they find a gun in the car.
No, there you go.
So, and it was like something else he did. I don't think it was a stolen car, but it was everything but that. And I'm thinking, okay, you've got, I guess I can assume what nationality the gentleman was, but I shouldn't really, because it could be anybody. What do you do with somebody like that, Carl? He's basically telling you that whatever your society rules are, I'm not playing by them. I mean, I'm not saying the guy killed somebody or you should hang him or anything like that. I don't want to do that. But what do you do? I mean, we're talking about a whole group of people, and it's every color and every nationality, depending on where you are, that really thinks these laws are not for them. And I think when you have crime and punishment, if you have a society that believes that this is the way people have to act to live together without running over people and stuff, basically 98% of the people have to sign up for that, and you're dealing with the other 2% that all through society, through history, somehow feel that they don't have to be some of those people. Well, when that number gets to 30 or 40, what do you do?
Well, this is, you know, in the context of what just happened yesterday, okay, you know, Trump gets, he's now convict Trump.
Yeah.
Okay, you know, like it or not. So half the nation is celebrating. The other half the nation is claiming, well, you know, we'd like to go take some heads. By the way, I don't expect that, you know, despite the screaming, that's all you're going to see. Okay, that's my expectation, is that despite all the yelling, that's all it'll be. Which is very different, by the way, than when someone who has a history of committing actual crimes and is a known and notorious opioid addict expires while being arrested for passing a fake 20. Okay, now whether he was actually killed by the police or whether he OD'd is even today a matter of debate. All right, there were competing autopsies. Yep. He was found with enough fentanyl in him to kill 4 men. Now, unfortunately, because I had a family member that liked to play around with such recreational opioids, I know exactly what people do when they get down that chain, because opioids over in substantial doses depress your respiratory function, and as a result, you basically choke to death, okay, because you can't breathe. That is an extremely unpleasant way to die, as you might imagine.
It's like drowning.
It's extremely unpleasant. So addicts, to prevent that from happening, will spike their opioids with methamphetamine, which is, of course, a stimulant and prevents that from happening. Okay? Well, that works great right up until you can't get one of the two components because your dealer's out or whatever have you. Okay? And so there's, and they found, by the way, they found metabolites in his blood too. So I know he was doing this because it's factually determined that he was. Of course, street drugs are not exactly known for their purity and, knowing exactly how much is in there. So it's pretty easy to screw up if you're in that situation. But that man was canonized. And then on top of that, we had an entire city essentially arsoned over that event. All right. And nobody went to jail for all those arsons. No one. All right, Minneapolis was, parts of that city were burnt to the ground by protesters, so-called mostly peaceful protesters. Remember, this was during the context of an election year, too,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
yeah. Okay. So, and no one was arrested and thrown in prison for that. Arson, last time I checked, is one of the most serious felonies there is, because there's always the possibility somebody's going to be inside that building and you're going to kill them.
I'd say it's right up there with just about anything. I mean,
in the same category as murder and rape.
It's like going 100 miles an hour in a city street. If you hit something, it's liable to be a person.
Well, that's right. So, arson is an extremely serious crime. It's not just property destruction. There's also an implied element of the potential, killing of people. And so that's, no big deal. All right, then you have Trump. He was president of the United States. We have a felony law on the books. It's been on the books since the 1950s. It says that if you aid or abet or employ, house, give money to, whatever, an illegal immigrant, and that immigrant commits a serious felony and kills somebody, you are liable. You, as the person who provided that person aid and comfort, are liable for a life term. Right? That is not a joke. That law has been on the books since the 1950s, 8 U.S.C. 1324. Little girl in Iowa, college student, might remember her name, Molly Tibbetts, was killed by an illegal Mexican immigrant who was living on a very wealthy Republican donor's farm and working there, and had been for quite some time. He got busted, he got tried, and he was convicted. Okay, so he's not an accused murderer. He was convicted of killing her. And by the way, there was a little more than killing that went on,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, I remember.
Yeah. So, all right. So he was appropriately tried and convicted. The person who violated 8 U.S.C. 1324 was not touched. And President Trump was president at the time. His Department of Justice, who was... That's who is supposed to be enforcing federal law. Wink, wink, nod, nod. That guy's a big Republican donor. No, we're not going to throw him in jail. Excuse me. All right. Now, when it comes to this particular situation, the Federal Election Commission has in fact ruled on this, because it's not like political candidates don't often put their wee-wee where it doesn't belong. Okay.
Well, yeah.
It happens all the time.
Coming from Chicago, I can tell you that for sure.
Well, it happens pretty regularly.
How about giving donations when you go to a aldermanic shindig,
yeah,
and you write the donation out to a guy in California, and when he holds a party out there, he writes a donation out to a person here?
Yeah, I mean, but the FEC has been asked in the past, long before Trump, this has come up many times. And so the question has been raised: is attempting to conceal that a criminal act? Is that interference with an election, and is it a crime? And the FEC has said no, it is not. Okay.
But I guess the question there is why, but you know.
Well, but you know, the law is the law, okay? And by the way, state courts and states do not have jurisdiction when it comes to federal elections at all. They have none. Right? It is a federal matter, and that's the end of the conversation.
Well, they do and they don't. I mean,
well, they do in the administration of their election.
Okay, they control 98% of it. They can say that the two parties don't need petitions to get on the ballot. They can say that you and I need 90 bazillion of which everybody's going to fight, so we can never get on the ballot. They can say that they don't take write-ins. That's pretty much control in my mind.
Well, I understand it, but what they can't do is criminalize conduct in the context of a federal election, because that is under the purview of the federal government. And the FEC has ruled, rightly or wrongly, the FEC has ruled that this sort of an event is not a crime. It's not punishable. If you think about it, Chief, show me a politician that has not made some promise that he or she at the time of the promise knew was a lie. Okay. They all do, right? I mean, every single politician. Come on, it's every one. And yet, those are not actionable. You can't sue a politician or an office for the.
So you can't have a trial for just being a general sleazebag?
No, apparently you can't. I guess the argument is that since all politicians do this, you'd be crazy not to expect the next guy to do it, right?
Well, yeah.
Well, okay, I may disagree with this, I may agree with it, doesn't make any difference. That's the that's the deal.
Well, I'm surprised when those guys, just keep on head theme a little bit, I'm surprised that, you know, I guess you used to have writers back in the day, if you had a whistle-stop tour, and Carl's running for office, and Carl says one thing in Peoria, and the next thing in Dixon, maybe don't exactly match up because the populations are a little different. I suspect that people, unless you have a really good writer with you, you're never going to get caught. But in today's world, these guys act like they're never going to get caught, and yet everything's right there on TV. And they still do it.
Well, that's the one thing that, you know, that has changed, of course, is that the internet is forever, right? Whether you'd like it to be or not. And
not necessarily.
You know, people say no, but I will tell you that the answer is yes, it is. And
The lady who owns, she owns the Lakers now, right? And she was married to Phil Jackson, Jeannie Buss. This is going to sound so awful. She did I use the term spread literally, in the Forum. She was a Playboy centerfold girl. And she did a thing in the Forum. This, you know, she's older now. It's just when she was 20-something. It was the most incredible thing I've ever seen. I mean, she did all this stuff in a stadium. There's her old man on the stadium. Try and find those pictures.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, you can throw things.
Not that I've looked for them, but I've heard. I mean, what I'm saying, people manage to scrub stuff out if they want to.
Well, they can to a point. All right. Yeah. But I mean, it's but even back in the 1990s when I was running my internet company, unlike an awful lot of places like Google that selectively deletes things, supposedly by accident, and then says, oh, you know, sorry, we don't even have backups. We had backups. And, and every now and then we had, a nice officer show up with an administrative subpoena, and, they really meant it, okay? And I didn't care. I wasn't the one they were subpoenaing. They were subpoenaing records of, one of my customers. And my, I used to actually sort of enjoy those because I got to charge those guys 20 cents a page and they want it on paper.
Wow.
And so I'm like, so you realize that when you give me a subpoena for every single thing I have, that includes every login session, how many bytes were transferred, what phone number the dial-in call came from, blah, 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 blah. That's going to be like, three boxes of paper if this guy's had an account for 3 years. And they're like, yeah. I'm like, okay.
Okay, you're a genius on this. I shouldn't wander off on these wacko stories of mine, but this one I think you might like. When Chris Mange used to help me on the show, and I don't know, he and his wife are doing something different now, but good guy. And we used to do the commodity stuff. Well, he knew a bunch of people with this. You ever heard of Catholic Family Radio?
Oh, yeah.
Well, I guess they're based out of Minneapolis, maybe, but they had a big office here, and they were trying to get a whole bunch of stations cobbled together and so forth. And you know who I met from there? John Lynch, the guy he just won the Super Bowl. He's the San Francisco general manager, right? Now yeah. he was Denver for a while. Anyway, his dad was involved in that. His dad was a huge man. His dad played a guard or something for Detroit. I mean, he was a little heavy as he got older. Kind of the guy walked in the office, he had to turn sideways to get through the door. Shoulders, the guy's like 6'2". I was looking at this guy going, how the hell do I get through this guy to the quarterback? He looks like a wall. But nice guy, but I can see where the kid got the size. But anyway, somebody holds a party, some kind of a fundraising party, and we get invited. And I'm like, why am I invited?
Why? Right.
Why am I? So Audrey and I go up there, and of course I got my Suburban, and they got it's way to hell up on Lake Forest someplace where the guy's got the beach, 100 yards up, 100 feet above the stairs going down to the beach and the whole bit. Place is massive. And we pull up, and there's got to be 100 cars there. None of them are a Chevy Suburban, right? So the guy parks my truck, and I'm going, this is great. Everything else there is a Mercedes. I mean, there's a bunch of Rolls and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I walk in next to the Cardinal. Now, the Cardinal comes up to my hip, the old Cardinal, not the new guy. And I'm like, what am I even doing here? The guy's got this massive, the pool house. There's 100 people in there for a cocktail. But you had one cocktail and you went out. You got to do the hors d'oeuvre line for like 30 seconds. And then you're outside in the backyard and there's 200 people in lawn chairs listening to all these speeches. And I'm sitting there going, what am I doing here? And this guy, he's this Catholic dude. And it's like the right wing of the Catholic place. I mean, I've been a Catholic my whole life. I never saw anything like that. It sure as hell wasn't St. John Fisher on the south side. And there it couldn't have been. So I tried to Google this guy. The only thing I found, and I'm not the best Googler, but I know, and in that, the only thing I could find is he gave $5,000 to Bush's campaign. That was it. The dude had to be a chairman of some place. I mean, nobody gets that kind of dough without being something somewhere. The guy's name, kids, nobody or anywhere on the net except that he gave $5,000 to Bush's campaign. That's the only trivet of the guy. And how can that even be? And yet, does he have a full-time staff just scrubbing stuff or what?
Well, I mean, you can scrub, you can go into your social media accounts or whatever, Twitter or whatever have you. You can go back and delete the old stuff or whatever have you. And I mean, for a person who just, so I sit down and I try to go after your Tom Hall, right? You can do that. That's effective. But if somebody really wants to dig into it and has some inside baseball access, that data's not gone. I don't care what someone tries to tell you about it being so-called deleted. It's not gone. Okay. If nothing else, it's on the archival copies that the company has in a safe deposit box somewhere. I can go grab stuff that I did software that I wrote in the 1980s. I've still got it. Okay. So people think that stuff's gone. No, it's not. But I think the thing that from my point of view, I had a nice shot of single malt scotch waiting for the verdict. All right. That came out yesterday. And I was going to drink it one way or another. I was either going to drink it because...
Well, you can't let it go to waste.
Well, of course I can't let it go to waste. This stuff's expensive.
Yeah.
But I wasn't just going to gargle with it and spit it either.
No.
Well, that was my dad's solution to sore throats, was you gargle with it, but then you don't spit it, you drink it.
Well, yeah.
So, there you go. But my thing about it was that we were going to get one of two things. We were the most I thought the most likely was a conviction. The other possibility was a hung jury, because you had two attorneys on the jury pool. And
my attorney buddies on Wednesday night were absolutely convinced he was going to get acquitted.
I didn't think there was any chance he was going to get a clean acquittal, but I thought there was a decent chance there was going to be a hung jury because you had those two guys on there. And even in a place like New York that, you know, probably 90% of the vote went to Biden. They hate Trump. And by the way, if you've ever...
They hated Trump long before he was a politician.
Well, I've never done business with him, but I've done business with plenty of New York business people. And if you want to talk about a city where you actually couldn't pay me enough to go do work again, it would be there. And so, I certainly understand where people would have some animus, okay?
Yeah.
Because I certainly have some. So, all right, fine. But the other problem with that is that somebody looks at this and says, well, you know what, even though the judge is playing games, and he was, clearly, even though he didn't allow this testimony in, we do understand what the law is when it comes to federal elections. And you had a couple of attorneys on the panel, and the jury's entitled to take whatever information they want into account. They can discount anything they want. They can count anything. I was not in the room, okay, during the trial. So that's the thing about the jury system is that that's how it works. So I thought that was the most likely outcome, but I had the shot waiting because we were either going to get a hung jury, in which case if they could try to retry him, but it would never happen.
Oh, that would never have happened, yeah.
Well, and it wouldn't happen before the election anyway. Or the other possibility is he was going to get convicted. So when we got the news that had come down, I was not surprised. But frankly, I think the guy deserves it because... What we've had happen is we've put an underline underneath the United States now. We no longer are a nation of laws. We haven't been for a long time. All right. I've been writing about this and talking about this since this stuff was a problem when I was running my company.
Oh, yeah. Without a doubt. It's always been a problem in the financial industry forever.
Yeah, I mean, this was a huge issue. I mean, I've talked many times about the fact that during the 1990s, I was well aware that being a technology CEO and therefore having inside knowledge of the business, okay, the general business, not individual companies, but the general business, I knew that the claims that were being made in these IPOs, these red herrings that were going around, the S-1s, they were garbage. They weren't wishful thinking. They were frauds. And nobody went to jail for any of that. All right. Well, okay. No, I'll take that back. Enron.
Okay. Well, that was a whole different.
Well, I'm saying they prosecuted a few people. Okay.
Yeah.
But the number of frauds that were involved. Now you contrast that with the SNL crisis, when they threw something like 1,000 people in prison. Okay. I mean, people really did go to jail for that one. Then of course 2007 comes around, 2008. Nobody goes to jail for that. We had a Colonial National Bank, which did a lot of lending.
People should have gone to jail for that were the Fed, and they didn't.
Chief, there were people... when you had IndyMac that collapsed, it came out that IndyMac, one of the reasons it collapsed when it did, and people that were over the FDIC limits got screwed, is that the bank examiners, the OTS... allowed them to backdate deposits. They knew they were doing it in order to not violate reserve ratios, and which would have triggered an immediate seizure. Okay, they let them do it, and then later on it came out that the guy who specifically let it go had got caught doing the same thing during the SNL crisis and was responsible for the oversight of one of the SNLs that blew up for the
Isn't the same guy doing something in Washington now?
He was allowed to... the best part, not only did he not get prosecuted for this, okay, did it twice, rank violation of federal law, he didn't get prosecuted, he was allowed to retire and kept his pension.
Somebody who was the most devious involved in the 2007 fiasco is now... doing something with NVIDIA or something, isn't he? Didn't we get that?
I think so. My point is simply this. The law, like I said, this guy in Michigan, when I was a young man, if you were driving on a suspended license and you got caught, you were going to go see the judge in the morning. Okay? And until then, you were going to sit in a jail cell. And the judge was usually going to be pretty angry.
Yeah.
All right? And so, you know, pissing off the judge is always a bad move, right? And so, yeah. But today, you have these people that literally give the middle finger to the judge.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, now, no matter what you think of Trump, and no matter what you, you know, all the ranting he was doing during the process of this trial, I was stunned to see that sort of thing, because I don't care what you think of that particular person behind the bench in the black robes. Doesn't make any difference. Boy, oh boy, the last thing you want to do is piss that guy off.
Well, and we're talking about a guy in a spot, and this, I've had, this is a bizarre conversation. We got other stuff to talk to about after the break, but it's I think that, like you and Kevin and the rest of the guys, the fact that he was brought to trial is, I'll say, at least somewhat selective. Is that fair? Maybe more so. But and maybe he was harmed. I've been on record 100 times for saying nobody should have to come up with $60 or $80 million to defend themselves against the government here. I mean, our right. justice system is in deep doo-doo, if you ask me. But the reward for him, quote, being picked on is not being president.
Right.
You know, I mean, the reward, I don't know what the reward or whatever the you know, the whatever should happen to kind of make this sort of right, whatever. But I'm saying the idea, I shouldn't be, if I have if somebody comes after PTI and they shouldn't and I win, and if I get picked on, it doesn't mean my reward should be like the head of the SEC or something. Duh.
Right.
I mean, what are we doing? But the man has shown, if people ever read the Constitution, and I don't read it like you do, but the president is essentially the highest ranking law enforcement person in the country, damn near the world.
Right.
This guy does not deserve that job. When he's going to sit there and all he does is throw taunts at it if it affects him. He's the worst nightmare. How can he prosecute anybody when he gets in there?
I just all I'm saying is I look at all this and I am, if this has driven into the public's head that the rule of law is dead in America. It no longer exists.
But we got to get it back.
Well, you're not going to get it back except by extreme means, because the people, the reality of it is that there's too much money involved in not having it that way.
Well, that's the truth.
Okay.
Well, let's go to break, Carl, because we'll talk about these numbers must have come out. We're up 9, so the Fed's fake numbers have come out. What are we here? Well, we'll talk about it after a break. Real quick break.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. I think most of you know that I'm also the Chief Investment Officer at PTI Securities and Futures. There we invest for and help a wide variety of clients, and you know what? No two are the same. Some have legacy stocks, some concentration issues, some maybe embedded tax issues. The others might need or want some portfolio protection. There could be estate issues or maybe new family members. The point is that we are all unique and the portfolios should match. However, the last several years have seen a relatively one-way market. It seemed that all we needed was to be all in. No protection, no fixed income, just be all in, no matter who you are or what your risk profile or age. Most management firms love that. Take this and like it, no matter who you are. Be careful with that. You are not everybody. I think most see the market view going forward as maybe different than the one looking back, so your portfolio should reflect that. Maybe it's just as simple as your life station has changed. Towards that end, we are accepting some new clients needing a more personal approach and are interested in negotiating the future and not with a portfolio designed for the past. Find me at 312-663-4310. That's 312-663-4310.
Good morning.
Give us a call about your stock. 888-76-JOCKS. That's 888-765-6257. Or email us stocksandjocks@live.com.
Hear ye, hear ye. The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howe, Ricardo on the board. S&P futures up 9, NASDAQ futures up 16. We bounced up on this report. The Fed's preferred inflation measure rose 0.2% in April as expected. It's preferred because nobody can criticize it because nobody knows what's in it. Just saying. We'll do this abbreviated because the rest of the world is still fluctuating on this. Dow futures are down 7. Actually, they're probably up by now. The Asia, they're closed, so we'll give that one. Nikkei up 433, bouncing back from their yesterday's sell-off. It's up 1.1. Hang Seng a little the other way, down 150.8% as their danger going under 18,000, 18,079. Shanghai down 43,086. We have the oil market down 8 cents, 77.83, as it's going right back down to that high 70s number. We've got gold down $1.40, 23.65. Silver down 7 cents. And we have bonds reacting. Interest rates actually are down on this because I guess it's a good number. What do you got for us, Trevi Weather Sports?
Morning, Chief. It's currently 7:35 a.m. here in beautiful Chicago. We're looking at 59 degrees Fahrenheit right now with a high of 75. Partly sunny, a nice day for outdoor activities. And tonight we're going to have some clouds with a shower in spots toward down with a low of 62 degrees. Over in Phoenix, Arizona, we got 76 degrees Fahrenheit right now with a high of 106. How with plenty of sun, and tonight will be clear with a low of 75. On the traffic in Chicago, inbound Kennedy from Monroe's 28 minutes, inbound Edens from Lane Cook 49 minutes. You're looking at 34 minutes, inbound Eisenhower from Wolf, inbound Dan Ryan from 95th 24 minutes, and Stevenson from 294 to the Dan Ryan is 29 minutes. On to sports, in the NBA, the Mavericks beat the Timberwolves 124 to 103 in Minnesota, meaning that the Mavericks will play the Boston Celtics for the championship finals. Yesterday, the Brewers beat the Cubs 6-4 in Milwaukee. That's in the MLB. And the Mets beat the Diamondbacks 3-2 in New York City. Today, we have the White Sox playing the Brewers in Milwaukee at 7:10 p.m. We got the Diamondbacks playing the Mets in New York City at 6:10 p.m. And we got the Cubs playing the Reds in Chicago at 1:20 p.m. That's all I got for you, Chief.
Let's get back to Carl. Carl, I hesitate to really go flying through these numbers because it's a number we can't check, right?
Well, yeah, this is, okay, so first off, PCE and excluding food and energy, okay, so core, both of them are flat. PCE is actually, last 2 months, is actually up 2 ticks, was 2.5, Jan-Feb, 2.7. March, April.
But this is the 12-month average, which is a total new phenomenon. Nobody
knows. No. That's changed from... it's a month, 1 year prior. Okay. So, yeah.
Instead of saying this month times 12.
Right. Which, by the way, 0.3 times 12 would be 3.6, right?
Right.
And then X food and energy is flat, too. So the problem here is that you're still, almost 50% higher than the so-called target, right? But the bigger issue in here is that when you look at personal income and disposable personal income, in real terms, people are now losing ground. Okay, when you take that against PCE, right, within this report. So yes, this thing's a black box, and it's basically impossible for me to evaluate this. But where is the current personal income coming from? Where are the increases coming from? And the answer is personal income receipt on assets. Big shock,
yeah.
Right? NVIDIA's up every day. And the other one, which is the 900-pound gorilla in the room, is government social benefits to persons. All right, which of course is inflationary, because it goes directly into the deficit. So here we are again with the market rah, 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 all right, over this. However, I would like to point out to people that the TNX IRX, which, I've been talking about for quite a long time, is that, that yield inversion, right? Since the beginning of the year, it has been making higher highs, less negative, and higher lows, less negative. And it's a stair-step pattern. We'll see what it does today. But it has not broken this pattern. It's a rising channel. And at the current rate, this thing probably uninverts somewhere around towards the end of the year. And that typically is when the formal serious recession arises. And actually is recognized. It's when it actually occurs. So we'll see. I mean, you can say, well, this time is different. Well, maybe it is. And oh, by the way, last year, as we came into the end of the year, it looked like it was headed towards normalization. Then it got monkey hammered from roughly October back to the, you know, to the end of 23. So, but it's still negative, and until it stops being negative, you can't look at this as a, you know, as a, the economy is on a, you know, is on any kind of a standard that allows you to evaluate things other than that this is bubble economics. Everything is still bubble economics. That's what that tells you.
I'll say it kind of another way. If a 3 or 4 year inflation number that they're giving you is 20%, and the number is really somewhere between 35 to 42, you're never going to have, quote, a recession. You're never going to have an honest number.
Well, yeah, I mean, the part of the problem with the PCE, I pay very little attention to this report. Okay, obviously the market loves it today. I mean, Dow's futures are up 80-ish now, and you know they were not before, right?
Right.
And the SPOOs are up 14 handles. You know, is this going to be, you know, happy days are here again for today? Oh, probably. It wouldn't surprise me at all. But this is truly an unprecedented thing in terms of the term rate structure. This has never happened before, okay? At least not in the record keeping that we have available to us.
We've had downward sloping curves like this. This is nowhere near as bad as it was in the 80s.
Oh no, but in terms of duration, we've never had this happen before. Never.
How long did it hit?
Go look at it. Go get some long-term charts. Take the 10-year and the 13-week bill, which have both been around forever, and go look at that. This particular situation, we passed the Rubicon on this a couple of months ago. It has never gone on for this length of time.
Well, I'm going to say certainly 79 to 82. I don't know how much before that it was. It was because the explanation was more desperation, because the near term was, I'll say, 15 or higher, and people said somehow, somewhere in the next 10 or 30 years, somebody's gonna have to fix this, or we're like economically dead. So your 30 year was 12 and your near term was 16,
right?
For like a long period of time, because people felt there's no way we're gonna have 16% inflation for 30 years, and we didn't. You know, somebody came in and, quote, fixed it, you know, Volcker or whoever. But it wasn't him. He was given the ability to do it. And I, you know, Carl, we were talking before the break about the savings and loan stuff. And I, one of the basics of me being considered by many to be this conspiracy knucklehead, I don't think I'm that much of a conspiracy knucklehead. I just remember the past, and I remember stuff that maybe I shouldn't. When I was in grad school, a lot of the guys thought that the savings and loan industry was an anachronism. It was, what are we doing? We're having people putting...
Oh, yeah, no, I know, but you know what? My first savings account was in a thrift.
Yeah, where I'm going with this is, for those who don't even remember this system, every neighborhood had a savings and loan, every city, every town, and... A savings and loan was actually different than a bank in those days, in the sense they could not have demand deposits, which means no check. You can't get a checking account there. Everything was a time deposit. Now, if you were a regular person like Carl and I, if you had $500 in there and you wanted to take $100 out, they gave you $100. But if you read the fine print, they could actually hold on to it for, what was it, 30 days? I mean, they never did, but they could, right? Was it 30 days or 90? Somewhere.
I think it was 30. I don't remember. The entire purpose of that was that you weren't supposed to use it as essentially a checking account.
Because they had all their assets.
They loaned against it, and they had time out on that.
Well, their assets, I think the listeners know this, but we'll go over it real quick. When you put money in a bank savings and loan, that's a liability to the bank, correct? Right. And if they put out a mortgage loan, that's their asset. So the I think the savings and loan were required that 80%, Carl, 80 of their assets had to be mortgages, correct?
Right. It was, yeah, essentially. Well, yeah, essentially, it was the concept behind it was that the money that was earned and was economic surplus of the local people in an area was recycled back into productive use.
Homes.
homes in particular. But it was locally done as opposed to being, you know, some national association or whatever.
So your appraisals, all those things were done by people in the area. And
they all had skin in the game.
Everybody had skin in the game. And it was actually worked. But now on a theoretical end, you know, the professors in Chicago thought this, what are we doing here? This should be, you should be able to spread this risk over other people. And also to their, you know, I guess I can say, in life, there's several things you don't do. Well, you don't piss into the wind. You don't tug on Superman's cape. You also don't challenge big banks. And the savings and loans said, wait a minute, we should be able to have a demand deposit.
Right.
So they started to inch a little bit closer to banks. Meantime, this whole savings and loan crisis comes down. Now, you say, what is the Achilles heel to a savings and loan? Even if you're hanging on to deposits, when I was very young, how your savings and loan, and this was an identity, for God's sake, an economic identity. You made 3.25 on your passbook. The mortgages were 6, and the 2.75 was all the people in the bank or savings loan, the building, the appraisals.
Yeah, you had to pay for all that stuff.
And by the way, the jerseys for all the Little League teams, right? I mean, that was the drill. So all of a sudden, the Fed, in their infinite non-wisdom, or Nixon when he went off to pay for the Vietnam War, we decided to expand the money supply, and inflation starts to creep up. Well, guess what? The short-term rates now go to, say, 12, and the mortgages are still at 6. Well, I don't think any listener here can't do that math quick enough and say, wait a minute. They're paying the two knuckleheads, Carl and Chief, on their $1,000 account 12%, and yet they're only getting 6 from their dads on the mortgage.
Yeah, that's working great.
This is working just swell. So in the meantime, some places start to go under. Well, they're all going to go under because nobody can live like that. But there's some places where big, you know, they had big names to them. Silverado and a couple of places in Arizona where this all kind of fell apart with the Keatings of the world and all these places. Then they went and investigated these places. But even though they had the noose around their neck anyway, they said, okay, well, you stabbed yourself on top of the noose by saying you gave this particular loan to this guy because he was on the board, or he's a brother-in-law of the guy on the board, and the loan was false, was a crummy loan in the first place. If none of those loans ever even existed, Carl, it still wouldn't have saved the place, probably. But they went after, like you said, they went after these people and put them in jail. And the one that Bush's kid was on, was it Silverado? That was a front for the CIA. They were running money to the CIA through the place or something, weren't
right.
they? Was that the
right.
actual, it was. So, I mean, they ended up uncovering all this no good Nick stuff, but it probably would never have come to light if the Fed didn't blow the whole industry up. And I honestly think, Carl, to be honest with you, I think Volcker could have taken his foot off the pedal probably a year to 18 months before he did and maybe saved half of those places, but he didn't want to. They wanted him out of business.
But it wasn't, but you know what? It's not, okay, so here's the thing. It's not supposed to be his job.
He determined when he was going to.
No. You know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
It wasn't
his job to put him out of business either.
It wasn't, but it also wasn't his job to not put them out.
No, but I think the big banks wanted them out of business because they now could do demand deposits. They actually became competitive.
Well, you know what? Maybe. I mean, it's not like political pressure, you know, didn't exist back then, right? I mean, of course it did.
Well, the academia wanted them out of business. They thought it was an archaic system.
Well, academia, okay, and you know what? We had this archaic system that was largely responsible for all the BS that went on during the 07-08 time frame. It was called Fannie and Freddie.
Yeah.
That, you know, that were essentially buying all the crap paper that Mozilla was emitting.
I think I actually had to write a exam paper, Carl, and what if that risk that the normal savings and loans, of course, the academia is too dumb to realize that on a street level, you'd rather have the people in the neighborhood doing the appraisals and stuff and doing all those kinds of things for something like that. All they were concerned about is spreading risk over all kinds of people and the mortgage rates. If it was, quote, more efficient and I could buy into mortgages from San Francisco,
right,
that the mortgage rate would be 5.8 instead of 6.0. And on a theoretical level, you can't argue with it, but on a practical level, I'd much rather have the guy down the block doing the appraisal than the guy in San Francisco. Right.
Yeah, and this is and the thing is that the the problem with corruption in general in any industry, and in housing it's probably worse than almost anywhere else except maybe military contracting. The problem with that kind of corruption is that it doesn't start huge and all at once. It's always a creeping process. Same thing in the markets. And the fact that it doesn't get stomped on is why it continues to get worse. Okay, is that nobody stomps on it because you don't want to. Nobody wants the gravy train to end, right? I mean, that's adverse to everyone's interest that's making money. And so no one wants that to happen. And so you continually have this, this forward progress with it. It gets worse and worse and worse and worse. And eventually you reach the point that it goes kaboom. And then, then we have all the recriminations and everything comes out of that. But it's not surprising how it all happens. And I think there's, what we have right now is a particularly pernicious thing because in the economic realm of things, take the political side of it out of it.
Okay, Carl, I'm agree with you. And I can't even, the more I read and I'm trying to research even the stuff I did in school, I can't even come across a time like this.
No, but the problem you have is that like you were talking about the thing with the PCE and these gauges in healthcare supposedly is 6% of the basket or 4% or whatever it is. Excuse me, it's 21% of GDP now.
Right.
All right. Well, guess what? If a dollar's spent, it's spent by somebody, right? I mean, come on, this is not rocket science, and so. You end up with this knob twisting that goes on within different elements of the government. It doesn't happen all at once. It's been going on for a very, very long time. But the problem with doing it is that you got to keep twisting it a little more every time the next revision comes out. Because if you don't, the entire game gets exposed and it collapses. It blows up in your face. So we are now at the point where... If you look at the budget analytically, the entire problem resides primarily within CMS. Okay, that's the essence of the whole thing. And if we don't stop it, the interest payments are going to continue to grow.
The thing is, it's not only for them; it's for every family. It's paying bigger number because they pay more than Medicare.
Well, I know, but I'm saying that if we do not stomp on this, and I mean destroy it. Okay, 80% reductions. You take all of that. You take a look at what happened at Twitter. Okay, everybody said when Musk took over Twitter that and then he fired 3/4 of staff, right?
Yeah.
And people said that's impossible. The place is going to collapse. It's never going to work. Da 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 da. Kaboom! 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 It's you're going to try to log into it one morning and it's gone. That didn't happen, did it? So what this tells me as a software engineer is that literally 3/4 of the people there didn't provide value to the firm. They just didn't.
Well, or the other people in a firm that's, we used to study a lot about what do you have to do if you actually have too many people working at a place. Now, if you take over the place from Europe or someplace and you buy a place in America and you go, this place looks like it's a little fat, how about everybody cut 20%? Well, I'm on a managerial level, and if Kevin's still watching or listening, that's the dumbest thing you can do. Because you from afar, it makes sense. From there, what you just did is reward all the crummy managers and screw the good ones.
Right.
So, I mean, you can't... I remember my stepfather who always... He was kind of a wacky guy in a lot of ways, Carl, but he was in the Army for like a little bit. It must have been the Air Force because he was going to be a navigator. And he had his papers go overseas, but he was real young at the time. And the bombs hit Japan, and all of a sudden it was over, so he didn't go. Anyway, so he learned enough in the Army to say, you got to learn... to work with people that you don't even really like, that, by the way, don't look like you, might not be the right. same color as you, but by the way, if you went back, I'm talking 40 years ago, if you went into one of his accounting departments, you'd swear there'd be somebody from Cuba there, there'd be a couple of black guys, there'd be a couple of ladies. Nobody's place looked like that. And he always ran you know, in one day the VP comes in and says, everybody's got to cut 20%. And he goes, well, all my people work all day. I can't spare 20%. Right. Goes, well, that's the deal. I'll tell you what, why don't you come with me? He said, I got, you know, 25 people in the room. That's what it used to be to run an accounting firm. He's adding stuff up. He goes, look around. He goes, you see anybody here who's not working? And the guy goes, actually, I don't. He goes, all right, you pick the four people because I can't pick them. They're all working hard. The guy says, right. Well, maybe we'll leave your department alone. he says, if there's one guy here smoking a cigarette, leaning back in the chair, we'll get rid of him. But is there? The guy goes, well, no. Okay, then.
Right.
You know, name a guy or a lady. I think that these guys, there's all kinds of stuff all along the road. There's obviously a lot. If we started Carl, we got rid of the consumer protection group, you know, the Elizabeth Warren's people.
Right.
I'm not saying anything bad about any person there or anything, but guess what? It's duplicate effort of eight other places. That's the only complaint I ever had about it. Now, so if we can that 15,000 people, or we put them somewhere else where there's openings or whatever. That's about a year's work for you and I in the Oval Office, maybe 2 years. And what have we gained? You and I pissing in Lake Michigan. I mean, what have we gained by that? I mean, you're
right. Well, that's one of the challenges, you know, that I see. That's real serious. Is that we have to go at the medical problem.
Right.
Okay. We have to go at it at its root, and that is going to make everybody. All the lobbyists and everything else are going to be furious. They're going to scream, oh, you're throwing granny off the stairs. Remember, I don't know if you remember, I think it was when Bush was in office, they actually ran ads, the Democrats ran ads of granny in a wheelchair being shoved off a cliff.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, and this is, and I mean, is that kind of a thing surprising? No, it's not surprising, it's politics. But if we do not take this problem on, right? I mean, the fraud within that system, just at the billing level, leave everything else alone, is crazy. And then when you look at the fraud within the trials and how we do drugs and procedures and things like that in the United States, it's enough to make you sit back and go, excuse me?
But Carl, the I think,
but it's all. But it's not because they're trying to kill people, Chief. It's because they're trying to make money, and it's just money.
The problem is, in my opinion, somewhere between this approval of drugs, the patent laws, somewhere, you've got people, and some of the people I know, and I really hope all this stuff works, for God's sake. I probably know 5-6 people doing some of the latest chemos. And I'm going to say they got to average, what, 10, 15, 20 grand a month? Now, yeah. if it turns out that we have to send Ricardo down to the Amazon and wrestle a certain species of alligator and pull his molar to get the stuff that goes in that chemo, okay, I'll pay 20 grand a month if I had it. But if it costs them 15 bucks, somehow or another, we got to stop this crap. We absolutely got to stop. I mean, it's not some story about, oh, it goes for research and this and that, and it's going for that guy's salary, for God's sake. I mean, we got to stop, and I don't know how to do it. Somewhere, I don't know if it's a patent law stuff, if it's some kind of law that says no matter what patent you have, you can only be 20 times over cost or whatever it is. I don't know how to do it.
I'll tell you how you do it. You bring the market back, okay, and you do it by putting people in prison who should go to prison.
Okay, but now, when you say bring the market back, are you going to open people's patents up for other people?
No. What I'm going to do is this. I'm going to enforce 100-plus-year-old law. The 100-plus-year-old law says that a purchaser of like kind and quantity of a good that travels in interstate or international commerce cannot be charged a different price. It's illegal. It's a felony.
Well, I'm saying, but their reaction is going to be, okay, everybody pays 20 grand.
Are they? Well, that's a nice idea. How about the guys over in Poland? You know what? You go ahead and you try that. You see how long it lasts. Because what's going to happen if you do this? And I pointed this out when I wrote Leverage. It's one of the sections of the book. We're 330 million people, and somehow we pay all the drug development costs and everything else for 8 billion humans.
We pay way more our people claim it's drug development, I think it just goes right to their bottom line.
Well, it does, but here's the thing. So if you say, you can't do that, what happens? Well, the price that everybody else pays goes up a little, because $8 billion is a lot more than $330 million, right? And the price for $330 million falls like a stone.
All right, we got a dash, but let's tee this up Tuesday, because what's the diabetes / fat drug?
Right? Oh, it's Ozempic, yeah.
So I mean, the lady wrote
there's another scam.
Well, the lady wrote the article and said it costs $5, and the thing's going for a grand. Well, okay, right. I mean, I guess if they're paying $250 in Poland, that doesn't solve the problem. The problem is, why isn't it $20 or $30?
But over there, it's $50.
Was it that little? I mean, I don't know. S&P futures up 14, NASDAQ futures up 30. I know there's big differences. I don't know how big they are. I've never bought a drug in Poland.
Enormous. So
well, okay, we'll be back on Monday. Stocks and Jacks. Hopefully, this rally will hang in there. We could use one. 3 days in a row, we're down. Whatever. So I wouldn't mind a little rally here. We'll see if we get it. Back on Monday, Stocks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.